And away we go, hour number two of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We will chat about who's the best team in the AFC in just a second, because that answer is very tough. But real quickly, Brian in the YouTube chat asked me about my Chinese food order from Sunday night. I don't know where you guys stand on this, because my old producer, Hot Take Hickey, he was like just appalled by the fact that on a football Sunday, I like to order Chinese food, and I think it's one of the great football foods ever on a Sunday night football. As you get ready to eat some dinner and watch the game on NBC, Chinese food is always a play for me. If you want to go General Tso's chicken or sesame chicken, you have to start off with an egg roll. Maybe you can get a nice little wonton soup. Last night I did the steamed dumplings as well. You get a fried rice or a lo mein, something like that. Just after you work all day or you watch football all day, and then you get ready for dinner and watch more football, I believe Chinese food Sunday night is essential. You can maybe throw a lo mein in there if you want to do some spare ribs as well. That's also part of the conversation too. But where do you gentlemen stand, Stuart Kovacs and also Michael Samter, on Chinese food Sunday night in football season? And I try to do it each and every Sunday night. It's just part of like a religion almost, and just something that I always do. I sit down on a Sunday night football game, and I just got to hit up my local Chinese spot.
Yeah, that's totally fine. I prefer pizza, I think.
Ooh.
I think pizza during football, whether it's during the lunchtime or the dinner, I think works. But I think Chinese is more than fine. I had it Friday night, but if I didn't have a Friday night, maybe it would be a Sunday meal for me.
When you order pizza,
yes,
what kind of pizza do you order? You have to get your pizza well done. That's always something that I need, is a well-done pie of pizza. But when you're sitting there on the couch and you're watching the games, you're in more of a gluttonous mood, so I don't think you just order a plain pie.
No.
But when Stu is sitting back, maybe enjoying himself with the beverage or a trip to the dispensary, who knows what Stuart Kovacs is doing? I'm not going to speculate. What does Stuart Kovacs get on his pizza in terms of a topping?
Either pepperoni itself or pepperoni and some other type of meat, like a sausage or a ham, some meat lovers type of pizza, but definitely pepperoni and some other type of meat, I would say.
I'm a big buffalo chicken guy.
Ooh, that's good,
but
too.
But you have to make sure that it's good buffalo chicken, because it's very easy to mess up buffalo chicken. I'm not usually a big ranch guy, but my local pizza place does this chicken bacon ranch slice, and it is just to die for as well. Samter, I know you're a big foodie. I've run into Samter on the streets of New York City. I was at a wing place one day, and I see Samter walking his dog and eating food as well. Samter, football Sunday, you get one choice of food at night. What is the ideal order in the Samter household?
I think, at least on a football Sunday, it's got to be wings, boneless, or regular wings during the day. Oh, yeah. Whichever, either or both. Right, I'm not only a boneless guy. I'll have wings, I'll have boneless, kind of mixed up a little bit. But that's more during the day. At night, usually by the time the night comes around, I'm so just beat up from the full day that it's a lighter dinner.
Santa's like, oh, make me eggs or make me a protein shake at night, right?
Not either of those, no. But I'll still divulge
a
little bit. Chinese food is fine, but I feel like Chinese food on football, it feels not like the right time. Like Chinese food on Christmas is perfect.
I'm telling you, all these producers here, they have bad food takes here at CBS Sports Radio.
No, listen, Chinese food is fine, but just Chinese food and football just doesn't seem like a good combination. Pizza, I'm all for it. Wings, anything with buffalo, anything, I'm all for it.
Now, we have to go back to the part where you were just like, oh, boneless wings or regular wings, it doesn't matter. If you eat wings, and this is one of my biggest pet peeves, it can't be boneless. When I have wings, I need bone in. I need it to be a phenomenal wing. I want it to be a little extra crunchy. I am very strict with my wings. Bar Bill in Buffalo, some of the best wings I've ever had. This place, BVH in Barryville, New York, phenomenal as well. And you got to be dunking those drumsticks. I like drumsticks over flats. That's sometimes controversial opinion as well. You got to be dunking those drumsticks and blue cheese. Blue cheese is a must with wings.
Blue cheese is definitely the ideal, but ranch is
chunky
good, too.
Chunky blue cheese.
Yeah, a good chunky blue cheese. But ranch is fine, too.
I'll do either.
It's got to be a good, thick ranch. Like, I hate, like, a soupy, thin ranch. But, like, I don't understand this hate of boneless wings. I don't know if you saw the sign in
London. Because they're not boneless wings. They're chicken nuggets.
I mean, it's more than just chicken nuggets. We've had this discussion between nuggets and wings. But boneless wings, they're fine. You put the sauce on there. You dip it in the blue cheese or the ranch. It's freaking delicious.
I like to do the work a little bit, though, when I'm having wings.
Right, but so that's fine if you want to do the work. I enjoy doing the work, too. But I see this hate for boneless wings, and I don't understand it. Boneless wings are delicious.
Because the bone and wing has more flavor.
For doing the work, and
no,
that's
but
fine.
The bone and wing has more flavor. And it's more of a process, and there's more of an enjoyment when you're having bone and wing compared to boneless wings, where they're usually not cooked properly, like they're undercooked,
if they're cooked
mushy
properly,
and gooey.
If you go to a good place, they're cooked properly.
It's totally different. It's a totally different food.
It's not a totally different food.
It is totally different.
It's chicken
to me.
Smothered in sauce.
There's a different taste when you have a bone-in wing compared to a boneless wing. I don't even look at it as this, even close to being the same meal, even though you're saying it is chicken, right, with hot sauce and all that stuff. That's just me, though. I'm very particular.
The place that I
wings.
Saw you walking out of serves both boneless and
yes.
bone-in.
And let me tell you, the place that I was walking out of, I was dragged to. A friend was going there saying how these wings were to die for.
Yeah. Average. I went there once. I haven't been
average
back
Average at
since.
Best. I've never been back. I'm not going to say the name of the place because I don't want to throw them under the bus.
No, I agree with
you. It seems like a lot of people enjoy those wings. But if first impressions go a long way, you could have a bad first impression and we could recover. We could still have a good relationship. But when it comes with wings, if you mess up my wings, done. Bye-bye. That's it.
Well, there's two keys to the wing, right? It's the sauce and it's the way you cook the wing, right? You can have a great sauce, but the wing is under or overcooked. Mm-hmm. Or you have a great cooked wing, but the sauce is terrible. So you have to have, like, both of those. And so for me, this place that we're talking about has neither. But if you find a good place that has it cooked properly and has great sauce, and it doesn't have to be buffalo sauce, too. I'm starting to branch out with, like, Asian zing and a little bit of Cajun sauces. All these different kinds of sauces that go along with the wings. Oh, there's nothing better.
The place in Buffalo, Barbell, it is a Cajun honey butter BBQ wing.
Oh, hell yeah.
Ooh.
To die for.
Oh, hell yeah.
Deion Dawkins of the Bills told me to go there, and we actually went together, a college friend and all that. Now I sound like a name dropper and like an asshat. But anyway, we went there. Oh, incredible. And this place in Barryville, New York, BVH, I've had a listener go there before. Peter Schrager's also a big fan of this place, too. And the great late Junior Seau also has gone to this place. They have this Johnny hot sauce. The bartender's name is Johnny. It's just like a sweet hot sauce that's to die for. I could eat like 30, 40 wings when I go there. Oh, and then they have this Oreo ice cream cake too with peanut butter on it.
I just never understood the people who will get the hot wing as hot as humanly possible. Right, like you have to be able to enjoy your food too, right? There's that show Hot Ones, which is fun.
Yeah.
Every now and again, I'll try the really hot sauce, like one wing with the hot sauce. But the people who just like get a whole order of insanely hot wings, it's just, what's the point?
I think like three or four to kind of get that thrill, it's fun. But I could not sit there and eat like a dozen of the hottest wings ever. I once did a remote. I used to do a remote when I was at another radio station, the small AM station, 920 AM, New Jersey, which was my first jobs out of college, which Stuart Kovacs ironically worked there too. I was like the assistant program director. Supposedly I was Stu's boss. I never remember Stu as actual employee because Stu worked on the weekends and I only worked Monday through Friday. But Stuart Kovacs, when he came here, he was like, I know who you are from 920 to Jersey. I'm like, wow, there's actually someone that listened to that show and knew that radio station. But they would have us at remotes, and every week right before the Thursday night game, we'd be at Buffalo Wild Wings. And they have that extreme like wing challenge where it's the hottest sauce as imaginable. With about an hour 30 left in the show, I tried it. I could not speak for the final 90 minutes of the show. And when you do a talk show, that's not good. When the talk show host, and it wasn't as if we had this great budget. Stu knows it wasn't the most, ostentatious operation ever. And there wasn't, let's say, a lot of helping hands there. So when the talk show host, who's also the program director, is not able to talk for 90 minutes and you have one engineer on site, yeah, not good.
I have to find the sauce because anything that can shut you up for 90 minutes is something that's good for me.
Sanders going to say, hey, Spike, can we get that hot sauce on tap here at CBS Sports Radio?
Yeah, it's the Sanders and Stu show. I love it.
All righty, let's get to the AFC. So this happens every year in the NFL, where every year in the NFL, there's one opinion that everyone shares before the start of the year. And 9.99999 times out of 10, this opinion is always wrong. A few years ago, right, the AFC West, it's going to be the greatest division ever. And we saw what happened with the AFC West a year ago. But you look at the AFC this year. Everyone before the start of the season said the AFC is so much better than the NFC. And through pretty much the first 5 weeks of the season, the Eagles are 5-0. The 49ers are 5-0. The only two undefeated teams in the NFL. The Buccaneers are 3-1. The Lions are 4-1, who defeated Kansas City earlier in the year. And like even the Cowboys, who were viewed as the third team in the NFC, clearly not after last night, they're 3-2. And you look around the AFC, it's like you have a lot of teams with good records. The Dolphins 4-1. But once when the Dolphins start get to be praised as the best team in the AFC, they get blown out by the Buffalo Bills. The Bills just blew out the Dolphins, as I was talking about. And then the Bills go to London and they lay an egg against the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Steelers are somehow 3-2. No one believes in the Steelers. The Ravens just threw that game away yesterday. And now people who were in on the Ravens at 3-1 are now out on the Ravens at 3-2. Jacksonville didn't show up when they were at home against Kansas City, and they only had 9 points. But then Jacksonville beats Buffalo yesterday. Kansas City still sitting there at 4-1. And like no one's talking about Kansas City outside of Taylor Swift. So I go around and I evaluate all these teams in the AFC. Before the start of the season, we would all say, who are the three best teams in the AFC? And every single person would tell you, it's Kansas City, it's Cincinnati. And then also, even though people were out on Buffalo, Buffalo was still viewed as the third best team in the AFC entering this season. And that's the other thing. Like the Bengals, I know they won yesterday, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you now that the Bengals are back at 2-3. Go beat Seattle next week. Get to 3-3, and then you could prevent the ship from sinking for now. But when I look around the AFC, and I'm really trying to contemplate who's the best team in the AFC, they may not have the best roster, but isn't this shaping up for another year of the Kansas City Chiefs going to the Super Bowl? We're sure Travis Kelce gets hurt yesterday, then comes back, scores a touchdown. When he had that non-contact injury, I thought maybe his season would be over or bare minimum he'd be out multiple weeks. He returns after halftime and scores a tutty in the second half. And that defense, outside of one game, has done a really good job this year. And if we're looking at Kansas City, and if we're saying Kansas City's vulnerable, and no one's going to knock them out, no one's going to take them out, no one's going to expose their vulnerabilities, we just saw this script last year, where people questioned Kansas City all throughout the season, and then at the end of the season, Kansas City's in the Super Bowl, they're in the final game of the NFL season, and even when they were down to the Philadelphia Eagles, they still found a way to get the job done. As long as 15 and 87 remain healthy, right now they're still the team that I have the most confidence in the AFC. Because, right, you could tell me Buffalo loses one game early in the season. But then after Buffalo blows out Miami, I know the Jaguars are a solid team, but that offense just went in a totally other direction. Miami, they have a potent offense. But this Miami team up against Buffalo didn't even look like they belonged on the field. I can't trust anyone in the AFC North. In the AFC South, I wanted to trust Jacksonville. I'm more open to trusting Jacksonville after Buffalo, but that game up against Kansas City, where Kansas City didn't score much, you know, many points, where was this Jacksonville offense? And anyone else in the AFC West, they can't compete with Kansas City consistently. The Broncos stink. They're a joke. The Raiders are horrible. Sorry, Stu. And then you look at the Chargers. They won two games, but they should have lost both those games that they've won. Because Kirk Cousins and Aiden O'Connell couldn't get the ball in the end zone after Staley gave him a gift. So I look around the AFC right now. I get it. On paper, the Bills look like a better team. The Dolphins look like a better team. But as long as you have 15 and 87, I know they're showing up. I know they'll find a way to get the job done. And until someone takes them out when it matters in the postseason, and we've seen teams come close. Texans, they had a 24-point lead. Didn't matter. Bills, 10-point lead. Didn't matter. Bills, up with 13 seconds left. Didn't matter. Tennessee even had a 10-point lead against them. The 49ers, they were up by 10 with 7.5 to go. Didn't matter. The only team that's been able to take them down was a team led by Tom Brady, where Brady went toe-to-toe with Mahomes, and it was phenomenal in that AFC Championship game, and then Brady with the Bucks in the Super Bowl. So I've lived this where I'm not saying the Chiefs are going to be as dominant as the Patriots been for the last 20 years, but when you are the team that everyone's hunting, when you are not perfect, people try to knock you off your throne and they try to put the demise ahead of you actually bottoming out or you actually not getting there. And if you look around the AFC, there's been no team that I've been able to consistently latch onto, and we're only 5 weeks into the season. And that's why when I sit here and I examine the Chiefs, I go, if you're still telling me there's a chance, that's the team that I'll live and die with in terms of getting to the Super Bowl this year out of the AFC. Let me ask you this right now. Stu and Samter, out of all the teams in the AFC, who's the best team in the AFC? Who's the team that you trust the most to get to the Super Bowl?
I don't think there's really a question. I think it's the Chiefs and everybody else. I mean, the Chiefs are what they've always been, and you know, they're always, throughout the regular season, they're always going to have a couple hiccups, a couple bumps in the road, and everyone's going to doubt them here or there. But like when it comes down to it, the Chiefs are the most elite team day, week in and week out. The Dolphins, they look great on paper, but their defense can't stop anybody.
They need Jalen Phillips back in a big way.
The Bills look great 1 week, and then they fall flat the next week.
And there's no middle part. Like in the NFL, there's sometimes you win ugly, and that's fine. The Bills either hum, and they're like, oh my God, this is the Buffalo Bills. Circle the wagons. Here come the Bills. Or they just fall flat in your face. And you say, how the heck is an offense with this much talent that anemic at sometimes? It's kind of crazy.
It makes no sense. And then nobody in the NFC North can you really trust. Just when you think that Lamar and the Ravens are pulling away, they don't. Just when you think the Steelers' offense sucks, they come through.
Well, the Steelers' offense isn't good. That game was over 5,000 times yesterday. And I know Pickett finds Pickens for the big score, but that offense was one of the worst offense I've ever seen.
But the defense is good enough that they can, that they can make do with how good the offense has been. But like any one of those teams in the North, just when you count them out, they play well. Just when you think that they're great, they come back down to earth. The Jaguars, we have no idea about, right? And the Chargers, I'll never trust Justin Herbert, I don't think.
No, I'll trust Herbert. I won't trust Staley.
Yeah, but there's something about Herbert. Just when like things matter, like he makes plays, but there's just something missing. It's like that Dan Marino effect. Like he's always great, just like in those singular moments or something about Herbert that's missing and I can't place it. It's the Chiefs. There's the fewest question marks and the most consistency and the history of winning.
Stu?
I agree with both you guys. It's the Chiefs. Mahomes is the best quarterback. Reed's the best coach in the AFC. I just, if you gave me the field or the Chiefs to win the AFC, I'd probably still pick the Chiefs, even though there are a lot of options that maybe could sneak up and win the conference, but it's still the Chiefs that I think are going to win it.
Man, we just had three people on a radio show agree on the same thing? If we worked for another network, we would all have to just yell and disagree when we don't actually believe it and do some contrived radio. But that's what we do here at CBS Sports Radio. We give you our genuine opinions. All righty, we'll take a break. We'll come on back. We'll update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here. But where else? CBS Sports Radio.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
So how about this surprise? Jonathan Taylor, out of nowhere, gets a three-year contract extension with the Indianapolis Colts worth about $14 million a year. You know, there was some talk show host here on CBS Sports Radio that went after the Colts and said it's ridiculous what they're doing to Jonathan Taylor, and they should offer him about $14 million a year. I said over 4 years. And I threw the guarantee anywhere between $26 to $28 million. You know, this mess, if they, Jim Irsay just listened to me, could have all been avoided. Because it's really about the guaranteed money. And where the guaranteed money was, this is basically like a two-year deal, regardless of what the years are, where you look at the value of what Jonathan Taylor brings to a football team. So this deal is over. This problem is over. Now Jonathan Taylor off the pup, played with the Colts yesterday, didn't play well. But Jonathan Taylor was asked if this is a win for all running backs with his contract.
This is a win for running backs as far as like where you all are viewed, the value you all have, people saying you're replaceable, things like that.
I definitely think it is. Anytime a running back can go out there and perform but also have some security, it just shows that running backs are essential. I mean, you guys saw today, Zach Moss, like just being able to lean on him in order to come out with a win.
Jonathan Taylor. You were so close to just giving the company line here for running backs. And then you go, oh, just look at Zach Moss. Running backs are essential. That's why owners don't want to pay you. Because if you look at the teams that have won Super Bowls the last decade, every team but the Seattle Seahawks have been running back by committee. you know, you can't even really name some of the running backs that won with Philadelphia or with New England, or you go around Tampa Bay, Kansas City. It's running back by committee. So when you say, yeah, just look how essential running backs are, Zach Moss, that takes away from your importance, even though you're being a good teammate there. Zach Moss yesterday had 23 carries for 165 yards and 2 touchdowns. A guy like Zach Moss shows you why you don't have to overcompensate a running back. It just depends on the position you're in. And for Jonathan Taylor, when you think of the Colts, that's the first guy that you think of. The Colts needed to pay Jonathan Taylor, and it made a lot of sense to pay Jonathan Taylor because he's still young. And once again, you could dress up these contracts with guaranteed money and just throw years on them. And it doesn't really matter what the years are. It only matters what the guaranteed money is. And for 2 years, where the guaranteed money is, I'm okay to risk giving Jonathan Taylor another year because I could get out of it after 2 years and be fine with only paying him about $14 million a year through the first 2 years of the contract. Let's listen up to Bill Belichick. So that's what I like to do. I don't listen to Bill Belichick press conferences anymore because I've heard so much of Bill Belichick where I think I know how Bill Belichick operates. So he was asked, what do they do now? I think he will answer the question like this.
You know, well, I'll go back and we'll study the tape and, you know, everyone's got to be better and we got to do our job. And it starts with me on the football field, and we didn't do anything well, and we just got to get better. We just got to get better. We just got to get better.
Let's hear from Bill Belichick. Let's see if I got it right.
Just plain and simply, we got to find a way to, you know, play and coach better than that. And so that's what we're going to do. Start all over and get back on a better track than we're on right now.
What does that entail, starting over?
Starting over.
You can never get a good follow-up question on Bill Belichick because whatever he says, whatever the follow-up question is, which is a fair follow-up, like what do you need to get better at? Like what do you need to start over? How do you do that? He'll just say, you know, he's going to get better.
Starting over.
We just got to start over. Start over. Come on, Stu. Just start over.
Starting over.
Here is Dak Prescott admitting that the Cowboys got punched in the mouth last night.
Yeah, I guess that's a good word in a sense. Didn't see it coming. As you said, put everything into this and got punched in the mouth. Called a couple of weeks ago, humbling against Arizona. But this may be the most humbling game I've ever been a part of. Felt good about the preparation. Felt good about everything, honestly, coming into this game, matchups, and they beat us in every aspect.
So this loss is actually worse than the Arizona loss. And I know that you could sit back and go, oh, whoa, 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 Arizona stinks. The 49ers are maybe the best team in the NFL. Games like that with superior teams against the Cardinals who are inferior happen, where you don't get up for the game. But the Cowboy fan was naive enough to think that this could be their year. And when you get dismantled like the way that they did up against the Dallas Cowboys, it's just more embarrassing because it just shows you that you're nowhere actually close to going where you have been since the 1995 season. And that's either in an NFC title game or a Super Bowl. Let's go to Robert Saleh, who made it clear that winning for Nathaniel Hackett was absolutely great after all the nonsense he had to put up with Sean Payton's comments from earlier in the year, where Sean Payton said Nathaniel Hackett's job and time as the head coach of the Broncos is maybe one of the worst head coaching jobs he's ever seen in the NFL.
It was a special game for Hack, obviously being here a year ago. Racked up over 400 yards on him. Put up 31 points, so I'm happy for him.
They should be. I love how they downplay it before the game. And CJ Uzama comes out before the game after the entire week where they tried to downplay it, and he's like, bleep them, bleep their coach. Let's go win this game for Hack. And then afterwards, the true colors do show, where the Jets were clearly annoyed. That's amazing to me how teams won't admit their true feelings before games when it was so obvious here between the Jets and the Broncos. So good for Nathaniel Hackett and good for the Jets. And Sean Payton got some humble pie. Here is Sean Payton, though, after the game saying his comments didn't impact the game.
Listen, they played better than us. And I credit, you know, Robert and that staff. They won the game. And I think that's how I look at it.
Coach, do you regret, though, those comments, making those comments?
I already addressed that, though, and it's a fair question, but I think we already addressed that the next day.
That's just saying words and trying to dance around the topic there. That's pretty lame by Sean. You know what it reminds me of? Remember a few years ago before Clemson was about to play Ohio State in the playoff, and Dabo Swinney did the coaches poll, and he put Ohio State like outside the top 10. Now, it's not the reason why Ohio State won the game, but it provides a little extra fuel to the fire there, and a necessary fuel to the fire that gets other players, you know, that are on the receiving end of those comments just a little upped up for the football game. Here is Stephon Diggs on his blow up on the sideline when the Buffalo Bills were losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars in London.
I went on the field and I was just, you know, echoing sense of urgency, get out of the huddle. Let's have that mindset. You know, we have it in practice and you try to build off of it in the game. You know what I'm saying? It's supposed to be easier. You know what I'm saying? You work hard in practice and you, it's the carryover. It's supposed to be, all right, you go have fun now.
Here's the concerning part about that, though. A week ago, you saw Stephon Diggs be happy, go for 3 touchdowns, and the Bills blow out the Dolphins. Then a week later, right after all that positive momentum, the entire team doesn't show up, and I expect him to be frustrated, but Stephon Diggs gets treated differently with how ugly it was before the start of the season. That's still something that I'm monitoring, and it's really on a week-to-week basis where I don't know what mood Stephon Diggs is going to show up in. And when does it eventually impact the team in a horrible way or in a bad way and it becomes a detriment? We all know Diggs is one of the better receivers in the league and he's essential for Buffalo. I understand on the sidelines, things happen that we sometimes make a bigger deal than what it is, but it was the Bills who made a bigger deal than what this needed to be before the start of the season when Diggs, Josh Allen, and also Sean McDermott got into it right at the start of mandatory minicamp. All right, and finally, here is PJ Fleck, the coach of Minnesota. Like to thank, I had a free bet this weekend of $100, so I threw it all on Michigan, laying the 18.5 points. I wasn't confident with Mr. P.J. Fleck rowing his boat against this great Michigan team, and P.J. Fleck had nothing but praise for the Michigan Wolverines after their bad performance up against Michigan, his Minnesota team.
They're as good as advertised. I think they're the best football team I've seen in 11 years of being a head coach. I've never seen a football team like that deep. They traveled 75 people and maybe played like 74 of them. They're one of the deepest teams, one of the best teams, one of the biggest teams, fastest teams, strongest teams, and they do not make mistakes. They are truly like a boa constrictor, and they do not beat themselves.
Now, Michigan hasn't played anyone yet, but you could only play who's on your schedule that you do create. And you see the way that they've dominated the last 2 weeks. Michigan the last 2 years had the best offensive line in the country, and they still get better. Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards are sensational. Roman Wilson's really good. Colston Loveland's really good. As wide receivers, Cornelius Johnson. I think J.J. McCarthy's going to have a big season. And Sanchez on the defensive end is a phenomenal player. Michigan will have 2 real games before they get in the college football playoff. That's against Ohio State and Penn State. And for Georgia, maybe their first real game is the SEC championship game. But you saw for Georgia, them just take it to Kentucky, who came off a big win where they dominated Florida. And Georgia didn't even make that a game against the Kentucky Wildcats, so they blew them right off the field. And you look at those two teams, you only go up against what is on your schedule. Georgia and Michigan, the 2 best teams in college football. We'll see when they go up against better opponents, though, how they do fare. That's a news brief. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on CBS Sports Radio. Let me quickly go back to the phones. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Let's go to Joel in Texas next up on CBS Sports Radio. Joel, what's happening?
How are you doing today?
Doing great. What do you got?
Well, it's just Dallas just needs a new coach. I'm just sorry.
Are you a Cowboys fan? Just wondering.
Get along with McCarthy, and there's no creative, genius minds there. If you don't do what Jerry Jones say, that's why that cannot play the way he can play. That's why I guess McCarthy cannot coach the way he can coach. Because they are controlled by Jerry Jones.
Wait. Joel. Are you a Cowboys fan? Just wondering.
I'm trying to be.
So you are a Cowboys fan. I understand Jerry Jones. He brings it upon himself to make him an easy target, and ultimately he's responsible for the product on the field. They have enough talent. Mike McCarthy is a good enough coach. This organization just does not show up in a big spot. I can't even pinpoint one specific area that I go, that is by far and away the biggest problem in that organization, because the quarterback's a definition of a good, not great quarterback. Tony Pollard was nowhere to be found in the game last night, and this defense just showed you know, they could go dominate these inferior teams when they go up against a superior team. They're not as great as what we thought. The Cowboys are just stuck in being a good team, but not a great team. And last night, was just an absolute joke where I can't even just pinpoint, oh, it's more of this than that. The entire organization is just stuck in like 10, 11 wins, and they're not going to go anywhere close to a Super Bowl.
Well, that's just called not preparing a good talent to play on the field against anyone. They're just not prepared. I'm just sorry to tell you that. I don't agree with you. Yes, they have talent, but you can have talent, but if you don't have the right leadership, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, but then I could just easily argue that last year they were right in it against the 49ers, and then Dak just vomited and puked away that game, did he not?
Look at the last play they did against the game in the 49ers. That was a joke. That was an embarrassment. I would have fired McCarthy and Kellen.
What, last year?
To call that kind of play at the end of the game. That's an embarrassment.
Okay, but how about Dak fumbling the football and Dak throwing interceptions last year in the playoffs? Once Tony Pollard went down, Dak looked like he was an average quarterback at best in that postseason game. There's so many things that you could crush with the Cowboys after last night, or things that haven't gone right the last few years, but this team's won 12 games in back-to-back seasons. Ultimately, the franchise quarterback that's getting paid $40 million, he's got to go get the job done. I'm not pinpointing last night all on Dak, but the last 2 years, I know 2 years ago you could crush the play calling. Dak couldn't even get the ball snapped. And then the year after that, man, that defense did everything to try to go get a victory, and Dak just kept on giving the game back to the 49ers. Let's go to Gary in New York. He's next up on CBS Sports Radio. Gary, what's happening?
All right, and first, hail Columbus! I'm a big Giant fan, and really disappointed about this team is working out. I didn't like, you know, what I call him, Brian the Bold one, you know, kind of getting in Daniel Jones' face the last couple of weeks. I didn't like that at all.
Why? The quarterback made dumb decisions.
He made dumb decisions, but sometimes when the game speeds up to the point where the offensive line is no longer effective, I mean, why don't they just not use a Hail Columbus, go Buchanan, go, go Buchanan, go, go Buchanan.
Yeah, Gary, man, you got to, if you're going to prank phone call like a radio show, you got to just like have a better prank there. Like, that's just like horrible. It really is. Like, it doesn't, like, I'm not laughing at your joke. I'm laughing at how poorly of a performance you had. Like, the Giants offensive line may perform better than Gary in New York. Right? Like, that was just terrible, Gary. You look like you're the worst caller I've ever heard. Be a little bit better there, Gary, if you're going to prank phone call a radio show. And we knew you were horrible right from the start. And I'm like, all right, let's entertain this. Let's see where he goes. And he starts to talk the offensive line. And then you just repeat yourself. That was a broken record player just spinning over and over and over again. And you're like, oh, stop the song. I maybe need to pay Gary in New York a visit after this show. I may have to take him out for dinner. Try to uplift his spirits a little bit. Because if you call with that nonsense and that crap, geez Louise. Like, I've been pranked before. At least be creative. I once had a caller say nasty things about my mother. It was funny. I at least laughed at it. Gary, you didn't even make me chuckle outside of just laughing at how bad of a phone call that was. All righty. I'll do the Mike Francesa. Now, we're not going to give that clown any attention. Or, you know, not going to pay attention. It didn't even make the air. Okay. We'll take a break. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will come on back. We'll give you three college football takes from this past weekend. First up with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, here is the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. We'll get to three college football takes in just a second, but here's why I appreciate Samter. Because when he takes an L, he gets like stubborn Samter, where he goes, oh, who's this talk show host that I work with that has no clue what he's talking about? I got to try to show that I'm actually right, and I got to go to the public. So I'm perusing Twitter during the break, and I see that CBS Sports Radio put out a poll question. How do you like your buffalo wings? Wings only, no boneless? Boneless only, no wings? Both are great. Now, Samter, I'm assuming by your commentary, you're trying to show the point here that it's both are great is going to end up winning this poll question. Correct, Amunda?
No, my point is that, well, partly, yeah. But the main point is to show that people appreciate boneless. And if you combine the boneless only and the both are great, that's 49%. It's basically
what polls
are
you looking at? I don't accept the results of your election. It's 51% on my computer right now Wings only, no boneless.
Right. 51% wings only, no boneless. The other side is 49% saying either boneless only or
boneless. If you merge the two together, yeah.
Right. So what I'm saying is that people
different categories,
people appreciate boneless is what I'm trying to tell you. Right. So 51% don't appreciate boneless. 49% appreciate boneless. That's all that matters. Boneless is legit. It's basically 50-50, and this is going to continue to go my way.
It's not, because boneless only, no wings is 10.2%.
But I never say anything negative about wings. I just said that boneless counts, right? So there are people, 10%, who love boneless, and then there are 39% who love boneless and wings.
Now,
so
I'm
therefore,
not great
there
at
are 49% who love boneless.
I'm not great at math. I took one math class in college. But you're trying to tell me here in this math that you threw out there that 2 plus 2 is equaling 6. And we all know it does not equal 6. It equals 4. You're massaging this one. You're massaging the truth a little bit.
So here's my question. People who say boneless only and no wings, do they like boneless wings?
Yes, but
okay.
They,
people who say both boneless and wings are great, do they like boneless?
Yes, but,
so
but
therefore,
here's what you're not getting.
49% say that boneless wings are legitimate.
But then there's 10% that are like, we hate a bone-in wing. And that is a different conversation than the both are great.
But my argument was never against bone-in wing. Or my argument was never against boneless versus bone-in. My only argument was that boneless wings are legit.
Stretching the truth here.
And anybody who knocks boneless wings, I just don't understand.
Stretching the truth here a little bit.
That's
stretching the truth.
That's not stretching. That is the legitimate truth.
And answer this question for me.
49% say that they like boneless wings.
Answer the question here for me. What is the lead and the lead choice here?
Sure.
How are the wings prepared?
Sure.
Just say the words.
Wings only is in the lead.
Yes.
However,
bone in wings.
It
actual
is basically
wings,
50-50.
Not dino nuggets.
Basically 50-50.
Not.
It's 51-49. That's as close to 50-50 as you can get.
Yeah, and if I put two options compared to three, two against one, that's not a fair game. That's what you're doing here. You're playing two against one basketball, and guess what? Be like, if you and Stu played me in basketball, you were like, oh, it's two against one. That's not fair. And then I dunk on both of your asses and win the game. Guess what? I still win. You lose. That's what's happening right here.
This isn't two against one. Both are great. Counts for both.
All righty. Let's get to three college football takes right now. I still can't believe that this happened. Now, Mario Cristobal, who I think is a good coach, or used to think he was a good coach, and I was a big fan of him. And I want him to coach Temple back in like 2012. He had this game won. It was over. 3rd and 10, you take a kneel down with 33 seconds left, and the clock runs out. Instead, he ran the football. Miami fumbles the football. So you're like, oh, you fumbled the football, stupid decision. But Georgia still needed to go get into field goal range. And they ended up going 75 yards, four plays in 25 seconds. And they score a touchdown, and they win the game 23-20. Here is Mario Cristobal after the game explaining his idiotic decision.
You know, when the drive started, it was going to be at 157, you know, and we could burn about 127 off, and then it was recalibrated. I should have taken the timeout right there at the end. Thought he could get the first down, and you know, we talked about two hands on the ball, but that's not good enough. Just should have told him to take any in. That's it. Fumbled the ball at 25, and they went 75 yards in two plays, so no excuse.
Coach, let me just give you some PR advice there, because you had like a long buildup to actually get into the meat of the answer. Just say from the start, I'm an idiot, I messed up, horrible, will never happen again, and people are more inclined to forgive you. But I can't believe that he did that. What he did was he snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory. That game was over, that game was done. And that's a horrible loss for Miami against a bad Georgia Tech team who just brought in a new coach. Also, let's hear from Jimbo Fisher. This may be the dumbest thing I've heard all weekend. So it's 17-17. Momentum has shifted back to Alabama. It's 4th and 1. And they're at like the 45. And Jimbo Fisher said, yeah, I'm going to punt the football. Losing mentality. And Jimbo said, if it was 4th and inches, we probably would have gone for it. Here's Jimbo.
We had a 3rd and 2, and then we went to it 4th and 1. I said, if it had been wasn't a full yard inside a yard, I probably went. We just went. We didn't get it. So I said, listen, we can pin them back. Our punter does a great job. Unfortunately, that's the one he kicked just a little bit long. They got it at the 20, but it was a tie game. And I felt our defense had played great the whole time, and I thought they would, you know, we'd get the ball back and play.
Jimbo Fisher is the most overrated coach in the country. Jimbo Fisher is John Gruden, where he won one championship and then ever since then just continues to underachieve. And last year they went 5-7 with all that money that they spend to pay for players, which I'm fine with. And then this year you lose to Miami, where Miami just dominated you in the second half. Miami just lost to Georgia Tech, so that's not even a good win. And then you have Alabama on the ropes, a game that you're in control, and you got conservative. And then afterwards, you know that you were in the wrong, but you then have the jackassery response of, yeah, if it was 4th and inches, we probably would have gone for it, but 4th and 1, no, that's too long. Give me a break. That's horrible. Jimbo Fisher, he should be thanking that there's $70 million after this season attached to his contract that the university owes him either way, or else he probably would have already been fired. It's just how expensive the buyout is, why he keeps on getting an opportunity to be the head coach of the A&M Aggies. Texas A&M Aggies. Finally, Oklahoma. They made the biggest statement of the weekend. They beat Texas. Now you have Brent Venables, difference a year makes, where last year the defense was horrible. They were below 500. This year now they're undefeated at 6-0. Dylan Gabriel has asserted himself into the Heisman Trophy conversation. Brent Venables asserted himself to Coach of the Year conversation. And you look at that Oklahoma schedule, where that game was back and forth between Oklahoma and Texas. And then it's looking like Texas is going to win the game. Then Sark got conservative. They settled for the field goal, and Oklahoma goes right down the field, just like how Georgia Tech went right down the field up against Miami. Tell me where Oklahoma's losing a game the rest of the regular season. They play UCF. They play Kansas. They play Oklahoma State, West Virginia, BYU, and TCU. They will be a favorite in every game the rest of the season, and they should get to the Big 12 championship game. They should win the Big 12, but you look at the take from yesterday, Venables and Dylan Gabriel are now in a conversation and on pace to win the highest awards in this country at their respective positions, Heisman Trophy for players, and then also you do have Brent Venables up for Coach of the Year. They'll both be finalists for those awards, and we'll see if they can get the job done. Coming on back, Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll do a little no-huddle offense next.